Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Tuesday, March the 21st. And today we'll be chatting with our friend George Rodriguez from South Texas. There's George right there. How are you, George?
Welcome aboard.
Welcome, as always. How is the weather in South Texas right now?
It's kind of cool and rainy right now, but
later
in the day, it's supposed to clear up. And I think for all practical purposes, we're out of winter and we're into spring. If not summer, it's going to be 80 degrees.
Yes. Well, what's interesting here is, let me shut off my phone so that we don't have interruptions. But no, what's interesting here is that we have this little rain drizzle, really, more than anything else.
That's what we've got.
Not a heavy rain, but it is kind of chilly, even though the temperatures are in the 50s. But I think it's that drizzle that makes it a little chilly. Well, this is not a Texas story, but it is consuming the national news. And that is, the possibility that a district attorney in New York could be arresting the former President Trump. You know, this thing, in my opinion, is so outrageous because I've heard from people like Professor Dershowitz, who is not a Republican, Jonathan Turley, professor, who's not a Republican, and others who are saying this is not a good case. I mean, this is a weak case. So you have to wonder what this fellow district attorney is thinking, what motivates him. Trump is going to win politically as well as legally here. So what are they doing, George?
Well, I think, once again, it is nothing more than these George Soros-funded district attorneys that have been elected all over the place, particularly in large Democrat-run jurisdictions like New York, like Washington, D.C., even San Antonio and Houston and Austin. And these people are more interested in politics and the agenda rather than in justice. We have the situation here in San Antonio, for example, where the district attorney has been caught and admits it, that meets regularly with the Texas Organizing Project, which is another George Soros leftist organization that works to organize community organizations and promotes all sorts of things like defund the police and open borders and that kind of stuff. And, if these people were interested in doing their job, Chicago, Detroit, St. Louis, Atlanta would not have the crime problems that they've got. But these people are soft on crimes that they feel are important.
Right.
But they go after former President Trump, which is an absolute waste of time and waste of taxpayer money.
Absolutely. And, of course, maybe that's the reason they're going after President Trump, because they're starting to feel some of the heat locally about the crime, you know. In New York City or Manhattan, where he is, you've got a situation where you've got these bodegas, bodegas who are very much a part of the fabric there. And, these people are being assaulted all the time. Criminals are going in.
The subway.
How many
people are pushed off the subways onto tracks on a daily basis,
Yeah. No, it is really, there's been a breakdown, as you say, a breakdown in crime and law and order in many of these communities where these district attorneys have decided that they don't have to obey the law. They just have their own definition of justice. And it's crazy. Now, I do think there have been some reversals for some of these district attorneys. I know that in Missouri, the attorney general there went after one of these people. And I think in Austin, the governor has talked about that, and as well as down in Florida. So hopefully governors, I mean, I do think governors
have
the authority.
Hopefully they will listen, because in Los Angeles, they tried a recall, and the DA did not flinch.
Right.
In San Francisco, they did have a recall, and not only did he flinch, he had to leave.
He had to leave, And no, look, I think these people, like you say, they're responsible for this climate of lawlessness that is just devastating these cities. And hopefully they'll be recalled or removed, or maybe the governor has the authority to intervene, or the attorney general, as we saw in the state of Missouri. But this DA in New York, I mean, this guy is out of his mind. I mean, again, I'm listening.
It's not a good situation. I mean, it sends a very poor message regarding law and order, regarding the rule of law, and it makes New York look nothing more than like a banana republic.
That's it. That's it. And that's not what the United States is or should be, a banana republic. I think hopefully, we're above that. But yeah, very bad, very bad deal. Well, let's talk a little bit about Texas. And let's talk a little bit about the border and school choice. Let me just quickly point out that school choice right now continues to be down in the legislature. Interesting article that came out today in the Dallas Morning News, basically saying it's going to happen. It's just they're working out some of the details.
In what form?
Yeah. And the detail is basically what you have here is what you've always had in Texas, George. You know this better than anybody, being a lifelong resident of Texas. You have this clash, if you will, between the rural areas and the urban areas. And in many of these rural areas, the public school is a big thing, and not so much in the urban areas. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to get the rural Republicans to go along with it by offering them, as I read in the article, the savings account concept, so that the savings account or the voucher, one of those two becomes the law. So it's still they're still putting the paella together, as they like to say. But I do think it's going to happen. I do think that we will get some kind of school choice out of this legislature, George.
Yeah, again, I think that it is a matter of time and which form it's going to take. You're right. Some of these small communities are, and it's more the middle-sized communities than it is the large ones or the small ones. The middle-sized communities are concerned because they have a tremendous influx of people, and their schools have got to take care of these folks. Communities like Cedarwood, Cedar Park, and Aledo, and other communities like that, they're worried because they could lose revenue, they could lose students. On the other hand, you've got some small communities that have historically, the public school has been the institution that unified them. The famous history of Brownwood football, Brownwood, Texas, where the stadium could seat the entire city, the entire community, because it was the public school that unified them. So it is a concern for them. On the other hand, you go to some of the schools in Dallas and Houston and San Antonio, and they're a mess. They really
Just look at the state has just had to take over
the Houston school district.
This district because they're failing.
Yeah.
So yes, I agree. But you talk about Friday night football. I remember when our sons were playing that there was a game in Midlothian. Now Midlothian is that's not a rural. Well, it's close enough to Dallas, I guess, that it's an hour or so away. But I remember we went there for a Friday night game, and that I felt like I was in an NFL game. and then when you're walking down the street, we went a little bit early to have dinner there at one of the local places, and you're walking down, the main street, and all these merchants are promoting the high school team. Again, you felt like you were in an NFL town.
They're serious.
And again, as you say, the school, I think also in many of these cases, the school, you know, the schools have graduated the grandfather, the father, the son,
right.
You know. So there's a lot tradition. There's a lot of tradition. So
generational, you know, tradition.
That's right. So you don't want to destroy that, but you do want to give the parents a little bit more choice. And I think that's where they are right now. And hopefully they will come. I think they will. But it just takes, you know, it takes a while sometimes to put together these compromises, which is what is happening down there. Now, let's talk a little bit about Texas and the border, because you send me a very interesting story that they're finding more and more Chinese immigrants or Chinese people trying to cross the border. And I'm sitting there saying, I mean, that's pretty incredible for somebody from China. I can understand one guy, but when now it's more than one, and, you know, we could be talking
90 at one time.
So you have to wonder, how does somebody from China, how does somebody get from China get to the U.S.-Mexico border? The last time, George, that I saw the map, there was a big ocean there between us. Okay, so either they're flying over in groups, or they're flying over individually, or there's a travel agency offering special plans, you know, special flights from Shanghai to Juarez or something. But it's crazy. I what do you make of it? What are you hearing down on the border about these people?
Well, once again, it's nothing more than further evidence of the failed policies of the Biden administration of securing the border, of controlling immigration. On top of that, it is also a testament to social media that has informed the entire world that right now, if you want to get into the United States, right now you can do it. The cartels have a pipeline. They have established a pipeline that reaches into Karachi. It reaches into Taiwan. It reaches into Manila. And, you know, a lot of these folks, all they have to do is just get to one of these cities and make an arrangement, and the cartel will get them to, next thing they know, they're in Nuevo Laredo.
But that's got to be costly to these people.
Oh, it is.
I mean, the cartels are not doing this out of charity.
It's not cheap.
They must either. And again, I don't know the details, but either they pay in cash before, or some arrangement is made for them to pay later.
Well, that is one of the concerns, the big concerns,
right,
that people, that international law enforcement has. For example, a lot of folks 10 years ago during the first big wave of immigrants that was coming across, a lot of folks were coming in from El Salvador, Guatemala, and what was happening was that they were mortgaging their property to bandits, to cartels, et cetera, getting money and coming to the United States. What these people are contracting for to get here, we don't know. And it should be a concern to our government. It should be a concern to all law enforcement.
Well, absolutely. And also, are they committing their families over here in the case of Central Americans or whatever?
Right.
Because, I mean, are they saying, okay, my cousin in Dallas is going to help me with this? And then, you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning, there's a knock on the door saying, hey, we're here to collect. Collect what? Well, you made an arrangement. So, I mean, it is really...
And it's been going on for a while, not to the level that we're seeing it now, but about 6 months ago, I interviewed the sheriff of Kimball County, which is Junction, Texas. And he had stopped, one of his deputies had stopped a car that had four Chinese illegal aliens in it. And so, you know, they were on their way to Dallas. So it is, I mean, it's been going, but not like it is now. Now, all of a sudden, you've got groups of 90, groups of 60 coming,
right,
being caught.
And when these people are interviewed, these Chinese, and again, I say Chinese, But I say Chinese, George. Could it be, I mean, could they be other Asians or do we know they're Chinese?
No, they're
Chinese.
They are Chinese. Okay. They are coming from mainland China. They're not coming from Taiwan.
Oh, okay.
They're coming from,
or from Japan or somewhere else.
No, they are Chinese, and they are they speak Mandarin, which is,
okay,
not, you know, as opposed to Cantonese. And they're all claiming asylum because they claim that, you know, they're coming from a communist country.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, the word has gotten around that you can do that. And I think, of course, it's being abused. And many of these people are, you know, I guess they're getting their little date with the judge sometime in the future.
Five years.
Yeah.
Waiting.
I mean, yeah, that's
a long time to be waiting in the United States.
5 years waiting for the United States to for a judge to see you.
Yeah, exactly.
And then during those 5 years, I guess you're just kind of hanging around doing whatever
hopefully
you're doing.
Working.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a crazy, crazy system. And this is, from what you've told me, this is happening now. I mean, the Border Patrol agents are now picking up more and more Chinese, which to me, it's fascinating because, I mean, it's one thing for somebody to come from Cuba or even from Mexico, of course, or Central America, or even from Venezuela. But when you're talking about China, that suggests to me that there is a pretty big arrangement here.
Yeah, right.
Taking place. That, you know, this is not something, you know, where somebody just happened to get on a flight and end up in Juarez and say, okay, I think I'm going to walk over.
Correct.
I think there's obviously a system in place. Overall, anything else from the border that you're picking up, George?
Well, you know, the other aspect of it is that we continue to see a lot of children, a lot more children being used to reunify folks. We're seeing a lot of single men coming across, or we have been seeing a lot of single men coming across. And then what we are seeing now are children being used to reunite them in the United States. Yesterday, there was a two-year-old child, if you can imagine, a two-year-old child.
I saw that.
That had a, I mean, and again, this is very calculated. It's not like the child was left behind or that, but this child, it's almost like it's FedEx being utilized. This child was brought across the border, left on our shores so that the Border Patrol could find them, and the child had taped to them the name and phone number of the parent in Dallas. And there you have it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I saw that story too. And that is, besides being horrific, you're using little children like that, a two-year-old kid. You're using him. I mean, you're dropping him off somewhere. I mean, it's just horrific. But it's the kind of thing, it's incentivized, George.
Exactly.
By the policy that we have. I mean, that should not be happening.
Exactly.
You should not have that, you know.
I mean, if you left one of your little grandkids with a name tag at Walmart so that somebody could find them and then bring them to you, you'd be prosecuted. This is outrageous.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Not only that, but I'd probably be killed my own family members. Who would probably ask, you know, how dare you do something like that? Yeah, I know it's absolutely horrible. I think the story of the two-year-old, I saw that as well this afternoon. One of the things that has always concerned me a great deal, George, is the morale of the Border Patrol people.
Oh, yeah.
And the fact that these guys are under a lot of pressure. And anything different? I mean, is the morale? I'm not. Look, these are law enforcement people, so they understand it's a tough job. But right now, they've got to feel overwhelmed and not very supported by their bosses. I'll put it that way.
Well, not only are they overwhelmed and not appreciated, they are constantly being criticized for anything that they do. But you've got two situations that really show how bad things are. First of all, you've got this. You've got the recent hearing that was held at the border, and none of the Democrats bothered to show up. None of them. Again, it's
that's incredible.
Politics that is being played with their job.
Yeah.
The second thing is that you did have one of the chiefs, the Border Patrol chief, for the National Border Patrol chief, actually say that the border is out of control and that the border agents are not being asked to do what they are what their job is. There's been a redefinition of their job descriptions, and even the job description words have been redefined. And what they are doing now, rather than controlling the border, rather than stopping illegal immigration, all they're doing is processing.
Right.
I mean, that is the main word that's called, that's used.
Right. And that's overwhelming because
that in itself.
The paperwork.
Because everybody's coming.
Yeah.
it's
overwhelming to say the least. I think the chief that you're talking about is Ruiz, right? Ruiz is the one who.
Raul Ortiz.
Yeah, Ortiz. I think that's right. He's the one who was before the Congress. But I find it absolutely beyond irresponsible for no Democrat to show up.
Yes.
So not even Cuellar showed up? I'm surprised.
Nope. No one. No one showed up. Not
That's
one.
That's pretty remarkable. I mean, you would have expected at least
It's Cuellar. Really shocking. It's really shocking.
Yeah. And so, what was there? What was there?
In FAR Texas, which is the... which is a district for Gonzalez, for Congressman Gonzalez. So,
right.
I mean, it's just his.
And what was their beef? That it was being politicized?
Yeah, that it was politics, that it was not a real hearing. It was politics. And clearly the people that were invited were sheriffs,
right.
Were ranchers, were citizens that have been suffering because of the open border policies.
Right.
And, you know, they just didn't want to hear it. They just didn't want to hear it.
That's well, the sad thing about that, George, is that had they shown up, they would have had a chance to ask questions. They would
have
had a chance to invite their own. They can bring their own witnesses.
Well, they even did invite a witness.
Yeah.
They invited one and then they left, you know, they didn't stand around or come
right.
to support that one witness that they invited.
Yeah, because that's usually what happens. You know, the party, the minority party, you get to invite some witnesses too. And you get your share. Obviously, as the minority, you don't have as much power
Correct.
As the majority, obviously. But you do get to have your own witnesses, and you can ask questions if you think some of the witnesses are exaggerating the situation, you can always challenge them.
Exactly.
But
there was nothing.
Yeah, that's really shocking. Well, let's close today by talking a little bit about, I guess, the World Baseball Classic,
yeah.
what they call it. Turned out to be, you know, I saw a statistic this morning that the game between Japan, last night, the game between Japan and Mexico, like over 90% of the televisions in Japan were watching this game.
Yeah. I stumbled onto it. I didn't know that it was happening. I stumbled
yeah.
onto it on Sunday, and you know I'm hooked. I'm watching it.
Yeah. Well, tonight, of course, is the final game, the U.S. versus Japan, and I would never underestimate Japan the way they're playing. But I mean, the U.S. should win. They do have a better team on paper, but I
yeah.
would not underestimate Japan the way they came back last night. But you know, I have to say this about the Mexican team. This is the best Mexican baseball team that I've ever seen, the one in this tournament. They put together a very nice roster of major leaguers, and I was very impressed. Mexico is not usually known as
yeah.
a baseball superpower, but in this case, I think they had a great baseball team.
Before all of the All-Stars, and that's what the U.S. has, before all of them joined 2 weeks ago, it was really funny because they were talking about before they joined, one of the commentators said, you know, well, some of them were skiing in Tahoe. So they had to interrupt that. But before then, Mexico had played an exhibition game with the U.S. and beat them pretty good. I don't think that they could have done that with all of the players that they've got now, but. You know,
no, the U.S. team is actually a very good team. I mean, I think that they, you know, if technically they could have, you know, they could have more pitching, but I guess everybody has that problem. But certainly the lineup, you know, the guys on the field is unbelievable.
Well, one thing that I was really worried about was that Altuve, playing for the Venezuelans, he hurt his finger. And in fact, there was another one, I think, who was playing
for the Mets. That's Edwin Diaz. Mets. Yeah, Edwin Diaz, the closer. He broke his leg or something, or ankle. Yeah. But Altuve is going to be out. Edwin Diaz is going to be out for the whole season.
Yeah.
And Altuve is going to be out for 2 months, which is a big loss.
A big loss.
For the Astros, because I don't think people understand how important he is to that team.
Yeah.
He is really he sets the table. I mean, he is one of the best leadoff hitters in the game. So he sets the table, no question
about
that.
Well, the Venezuelan team on Saturday did pretty good against the U.S. It was a throw.
That was a great game. That was a great game, the one against Venezuela. Now, the Cuba team, I have a post over at the American Thinker today talking about the Cuba team because, you know, it's interesting. They really did not bring the best Cuban players to this tournament.
And I wonder why.
And you wonder why. And the answer is the defections. I mean, they actually brought an older team. If you if you look at the roster, this was more of a kind of a 30-something roster. So it's an older veteran roster.
And they still have the defector.
Yeah, but the kinds of guys that wouldn't be as
attractive
to a major league scout.
Correct.
So I think they kept all the young guys. And yes, one of their players did defect. But as I write in my American Thinker post, I was rooting for the United States. And that's because it was a game between freedom and tyranny.
Exactly.
And even though, of course, the Cuban players are not to blame specifically, I do hate the country they represent. I hate the government that they represent.
I don't know if you noticed, I kept watching the shots that the TV was making, and on various occasions you could tell that there were some chaperones that were in the they were both in the dugout as well as walking around behind the dugout.
Yeah, well, they don't move freely. I mean, when they travel, this is a problem. I mean, this is a story with the Cuban team that goes back for years. Wherever they go overseas, they're always being watched, and every once in a while one will defect. And I would think in a city like Miami, it would be easy to defect. But it's just, you know, this is for me, I was rooting for the U.S. not because I hate Cuba, but because I hate the system that they represent, and I just felt that it was important and one last thing that I'll tell you, Nolan Arenado, the amazing third baseman, he plays with the Cardinals, and he's on the U.S. team. I didn't know this until Sunday night or whenever they were playing. His father is from Cuba. His father came here from Cuba, and I think his mother also. So, you know, he's a Cuban American, I guess, and he's a great player on top of everything, but I was happy to see the Cuba team eliminated, and I guess they're back. Home
quite soundly too.
Yes, I wasn't even close. And again, in the post that I wrote, I analyzed that a little bit because the fact is this was not the best team.
Yeah.
I've seen Cuba team.
I was very shocked by it.
Much better teams, much younger, more athletic teams than the one that they sent to. To the classic. Well, George, who knew that we'd be talking about baseball? The baseball season, we'll be here in a couple of weeks, so we'll have more to talk. Thank you again for joining us. What's the latest on your calendar?
The biggest thing that we've got going here in San Antonio is that I'm helping to fight this defund the police city charter that they want to push through. And I've been doing a lot of speaking at various clubs and groups here in San Antonio. I'm quite worried about it. The charter amendment that the left is pushing includes lessening marijuana arrests, raising the threshold for the amount of money that you can or the amount of goods that you can steal and not be arrested for. I mean, it's almost a blueprint of what we have seen in places like San Francisco and Portland.
And Manhattan, yeah. I mean, that's exactly what we were talking about in the earlier part of the conversation. George, have a great day. And as always, thank you so much for your time. Keep up the great work.
Thank you very much.
And we'll get together the next time, as we always do.
You got it.
All right. Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Enjoy yourself. Our good friend, George Rodriguez, down in San Antonio, talking about a few things, not just from the Texas legislature, but what's happening on the border. And this story that George was bringing to our attention about all these Chinese people showing up on the border. This is it's a brand new thing. This is happening, brand new. And not necessarily that I'm picking on the Chinese. That's not my point. But I'm simply saying, how do they get here? Which really, again, you have to wonder what kind of a network is getting these people to the border. It's got to be one heck of a network if you bring people, not just one, but several of them, at times 40, 50, have been found all the way from China. That is a network that would suggest to you that there's a lot of money behind it, certainly a lot of organization, a lot of infrastructure to move people around like that. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later. Have a great day, everybody.